So this is module 20, class number 2, on the preliminaries or the four reminders. So what I thought we'd look at today, the sort of outline I have, is I'm going to talk a little bit about the view, why we want to contemplate these, why we want to study Lojong, why we want to do Tonglen. Where does that come from? And then we're going to do a little bit of talking in pairs about slogans. These are not slogans, the reminders. And then we're going to do some contemplative meditation about whichever of the four reminders you want to pick, and then talk about that afterwards. So I do the four reminders every day, and I sort of thought about, well, why do I do them? Why? What's the point? And I realized it's because otherwise, what's the point of doing the meditation? So the point, what's the point of the activity I undertake if I don't think about that there's a point to it? If I don't say, like, well, what if I just didn't meditate for a while? That would be fine. What if I didn't try to be a kind person every day? I could take a few weeks off and just sort of be grouchy or like a lot of other people. And what would it matter? What would it matter if I, like, why does it matter so much? Okay. What would it matter if I took the Bodhisattva vow and decided that, you know, every other week I would be just, you know, selfish person and not helpful, because it's just, it's a lot of work. You know, I could have an easier, quote-unquote, easier life if I chose a different path, or chose to step off the path and do, I don't know what you do, where you go when you do that, go swimming for a while or something, and then come back, you know, or not come back. And so the four reminders are really a way of saying, like, every day, like, why am I going to sit here for 35 or 45 minutes? Why am I going to notice what I'm doing and actually reflect on it instead of just, oh yeah, I wasn't nice, so well, that's the way it goes, you know? So why is it that I notice, like, oh, I need to pause and go deal with this person because they're in a tough spot, and I have the time, I have the energy, I have some knowledge to help them, instead of, oh, I was really, you know, going to go for a walk, it would be nice to go for a walk. So where, what makes me turn from whatever I felt like would be kind of fun today or whatever, and direct my attention a different place? So that's kind of, for me, kind of what it helps me with, and maybe that wasn't the intention of it, but that's kind of, that if I'm going to take that Bodhisattva vow, then I need to every day sort of think about, what did that mean? What does that mean I'm supposed to at least make an effort to do? Whether or not I succeed every day, I get to do what? Examine myself and say, oh, today was, you know what, I did more good than evil, maybe, or today it was about even, or today I just let it all go. I just didn't have any bandwidth. So what I did is I picked out from the book, except not on the back side of my original. So here we have what?
Absolute Bodhicitta.
Shunyata. Here's the Shunyata version.
The back of the
ground of all, yeah.
Yes, there we go. But everybody else got a double-sided
sheet. Oh, okay.
Everybody else, they use the magic. So these are just some quotes from the chapter on the preliminaries in the practice of Lojong. And I felt like he did a nice job of sort of pulling some of the essence out of a lot of this. And so I'm going to sort of say what he said. Or actually, I'm going to ask other people to say what he said, because as a teacher, I've decided to get tired of hearing myself. So I'm going to ask, see, in class, I incentivize this.
Get a cookie if you raise your hand.
No, it's not that. It's that everyone is expected to participate, and so you can choose an easy participation, like reading something, or hard participation by answering a question. So here I'm just going to... If someone would read just the first quote. Go for it, Jen.
contemplate the preliminaries at the beginning of each practice session. This is an act that will not only sharpen our intelligence, but will renew our enthusiasm for the spiritual path.
Someone, just the next one. Kathleen, would you read?
One of the most important preliminaries, the one that takes precedence over all the others, is the quality of interested humility. Instead of saying devotion, say interested humility.
So that really caught me, that he spoke about that in the supplication to the
Kagyu.
There's a line that said, devotion is the head of meditation. And devotion, it always did strike me as seemed like a funny word. And it's really more about, I like the phrase, he's interested humility. Like, here's someone who knows, who I could benefit from knowing, from listening to and hearing. And it's not about, like, you're the most wonderful person in the world, which is sort of throwing it at the other person, but seeing it as, I have things to learn, and I know that, and I'm going to listen to what you have to say, yes.
I'd add to that, when I read that, I thought was really interesting, is that devotion can sometimes have a sense of righteousness to it, or blind devotion,
right.
You often hear. Interested humility, to me, seems like interested, meaning I'm interested in this, and I'm going to question it. I'm going to work with it. At the same time, humility. I'm going to let go of my own knowledge enough to be able to receive the teaching. So it's this really interesting combination of kind of analyzing, but also having the humility to give up my own knowledge, which I think is a very powerful combination.
Mm. Knowledge is an interesting word, by the way, that you use. We don't have to go into that right now, but that's an interesting use of the word.
Mm-hmm. Your opinion.
I think more assumption.
I think I know.
Right.
My own judgments. I'm using knowledge in the more mundane.
Okay, so someone want to read Precious Human Birth, Ralph Muffy.
Precious Human Birth. The freedoms we possess consist of being born human, having the leisure to pursue spiritual practice, possessing physical health and intelligence, contact with the teachings, and the moral sense to appreciate those teachings, and feel compassion for others.
But sort of if you think about, I have to get up a little early to meditate, but I have a job I can go to. I have a house I can live in. I know when I finish meditating, I have food in my house I can eat. I know that I can give that hour up, and it's not an hour where I could go earn $6.50 an hour, which is what I need to keep myself going. That I have sort of all this privilege of being, I mean, it really is privilege to be able to do this, that I can come in the evening because I don't have to go work a second job. I don't have people at home who are so dependent on me that I can't be out of the house. You know, that it really is kind of this amazing gift.
And the fact that you heard the Dharma at all.
Right.
And that
somehow I ran into Emily, and Emily said, okay, let's make a Sangha. And there's a Sangha. And she never said, now let's not have a Sangha.
And here's the space, and the whole
collection of ways that we're fortunate to have that the opportunity we have. It's sort of amazing. Okay, who's up for death and impermanence? Mary, how about you?
Death and impermanence. We can't keep on postponing or deferring spiritual practice in such a cavalier manner. Immersing ourselves in trivial pursuits and refusing to consider the impermanent and pernicious nature of our lives. It is not only our own mortality that we need to contemplate. Everything is subject to change and temporality.
So, I'm tired today.
turn off that television.
It's a busy week. I can do an online crossword puzzle. There's some funny videos on, you know, computer. I'll do it, you know, next week. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it when school's over, when I retire, you know, which I don't know, right? We don't know. Like, maybe not. Okay, karmic cause and effect. Michael Gober.
Karmic cause and effect. Our actions and reactions form the cause and effect of action that in turn determines the kinds of experiences we have. This cycle of cause and effect continues relentlessly unless we embark on a virtuous spiritual path and learn to reverse this process by performing wholesome actions. It is our intentions that determine whether an action is wholesome or unwholesome, and therefore it is our intentions that will dictate the quality of our future experiences.
Right, so we make choices every day, what we do, what we don't do, why we do the different things we do, and that's kind of, you're making a choice. It's not, no one's holding, at least as far as I've ever seen for anyone here, no one's holding a knife to our backs or anything like that. We're, you know, to the extent that we believe in that, we have freedom to choose. There we go. Okay, who's up for faults of samsara? How about that one?
I'll take it. faults of samsara. We should never be in any doubt that the fulfillment of our temporary needs is quite different from the fulfillment of our more profound needs. If we don't recognize this distinction, we will constantly be frustrated by searching for illusory satisfactions that are intrinsically incapable of delivering such fulfillment.
And it's often thinking about, like, is this a temporary need? Is this a real need?
Mm-hmm.
So I spent the 10 minutes when I should have been here chatting at the beginning, I really wanted to see the full moon coming up.
Yeah.
And I decided it was, whatever it was, I was going to do it either way. And sort of a lesson in choosing, but last quote. Who's up for the last one that I picked on, Jack? You good?
These preliminaries are a skillful method for teaching us to live a purposeful and meaningful life. It is precisely because everything is impermanent that we have the opportunity to bring about positive change in our lives. That's why we should try to create positive change while we can, instead of postponing it to some indefinite time in the future when our circumstances might suddenly change.
I just thought that was a great, like, summary of what the preliminary said.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two different questions.
The first question, looking at the preliminaries, looking at the four reminders, which one resonates with you? How does it resonate with you? It's like, I kind of do this, I kind of get this. This fits in with how I run my life. Okay. So our second question, suppose that you could say, four reminders seems like an awful lot. I think I'm going to knock one of these off. It's not working for me that well, in whatever sense. What would that be? Which one? If you just finished with three, which one would you be happy to let go?
Wait, what? I missed that one.
So which of the four, if you were going to just, if we were going to say four reminders is a lot, and there's one I don't actually like that much.
Oh, so it's about not liking it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what if there's,
you know, whatever would be involved in not liking.
Okay.
Or not having to deal with.
Not having to deal with. Like, I just, you know.
Okay.
No, thank you.
That's
okay. Okay, so.
I'm actually going to read, and we're going to lose them from here.
Sakyong Nipam
has this book, Turning the Mind into an Ally, that was recommended somewhere. And so I asked Emily if she had a copy, and she said she had this spare copy, mm-hmm. that she didn't need excess copies in her life anymore, if she's moving to a smaller place. And he has nice instructions on contemplative meditation. And so what we're going to contemplate, each of us, is to choose one of the reminders or portion of one of the reminders, whatever you'd like, whether it's the one that you're like, this is the one I like, or you know, if you want to work with the greatest resentments first, you might pick the one you didn't like and work on that. And so I'll give instructions and we'll do about 10 minutes of contemplation. Mm-hmm. People want to find it comfortable. Since having a stable mind is the ground of contemplation, begin your session with a few minutes of shamatha. Then shift your focus from the breath to a certain thought, inspiration, or intent. So in this case, part or all of a reminder. For example, you can say to yourself, now I'm placing my mind on the preciousness of human birth. Or now I am placing my mind on the reality of impermanence. Then gather the mind and place it on those words. Contemplation is peaceful abiding with a different object. So everything you've learned about shamatha applies to this practice. When you recognize that you're thinking about something besides the object of meditation, acknowledge that you're distracted and return to the thought you're contemplating. In this practice, the words are the gateway to the meaning. As you continue to place your mind on them, eventually the words fall away, and their meaning or the experience to which they refer will arise. For example, you may start to feel your heart opening up as you wish that your sister or your best friend be happy. In contemplating impermanence or death, you might feel a sense of groundlessness. By resting your mind in that meaning, that feeling, you're building familiarity with a particular facet of reality. At times you may find that you place your mind on the words and you don't really feel a thing. Just continue resting your mind on the words. As your own relationship with those words deepens, eventually an experience of their meaning will arise. It's sometimes necessary to really think about what you're doing. Return to the words as the object of meditation, and at the same time bring in thoughts, images, and memories to enrich your contemplation. Sometimes I'll remember the beggars I've seen in India, for example, to help evoke a feeling of compassion. If you're practicing raising the mind of love, you can imagine people you know being really happy. This kind of focused and controlled thinking can crack the shell of the words and let the meaning come through. At the end of your session, let the meaning of your meditation become your view. For example, if you've been contemplating the preciousness of human birth, throughout the day you can let your mind rest in a sense of appreciation for life. You can be thoroughly soaked in the message of your contemplation. Any thoughts, comments?
Is that really 10 minutes?
It's about 8 minutes.
Went by very fast. I was distracted a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that I kept dancing back and forth between precious human birth and faults of samsara, and then I realized they're in some way saying the very same thing, that the preciousness of being free and well-favored, difficult to gain, easy to lose, now I must do something meaningful. And that would make me think about the homes, friends, wealth, and comforts of samsara and how easily they're lost. And right now, all around the world, we see that happening all the time, actually, with the floods and the hurricanes and people who live in God realms, basically, in beautiful places and with beautiful homes or not, but homes, and whoosh, it's gone.
And how amazing that I think I wouldn't be one of them. How ridiculous. So I thought how interesting. I'd never made the connection with them before. In that way.
It seems so easy to get off track, even though we may have the intention to practice and to hold this view. Somehow it seems it takes a lot of discipline to actually work with this, and I think the way you're doing it, at least on a daily basis, and if we're working with the Lojong slogans, they do start to penetrate. And I think it's just like bringing it to mind, that it does turn your mind to the Dharma rather than being really caught up in something for a long time without even noticing you could actually like take a break from that obsession. That there's more space, actually, I think, that comes to us when we practice these things.
Yeah, that's really striking to me, because I think just in, you know, when you sent out the email that said just kind of start reflecting on these and integrating them in your daily life, that I would, you know, read through them in the morning and then, you know, reflect on a little bit and then kind of put them to rest. But just in that tiny moment of just taking a few minutes to reflect on those couple of things, you know, after a couple of days, it was striking how some of them just kind of came back into my stream of consciousness at random moments, you know, driving in the car, all of a sudden as I'm thinking about, you know, how I'm getting pissed off by somebody that just cut in front of me and what's my reaction going to be like thinking about how, you know, karma plays out in certain contexts. And I just found it really interesting, just that, I mean, for me personally, it was just thinking about it a little bit, you know, it was really interesting to see it kind of naturally come back. And it made me think about, well, that's only after, like, you know, a week of doing this. Like, boy, imagine if I really, you know, could be more committed to, you know, making it a part of the regular practice. It was, I don't know, it was cool to experience that.
Mm-hmm. I think contemplating on precious human birth for me brings up what I think is the most powerful aspect of human birth, which is potential. All of the rest of this we can recognize because of our potential. Everything that we can accomplish in studying is based upon potential. And of course, potential is because of impermanence, which I kind of like as well. But I find the more that I focus on potential, the more confidence I have in maintaining my studies and in working with every moment that comes up, no matter how difficult, because there's always the potential for that moment. Mm-hmm. In whatever direction it goes, it's just filled with potential. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a It just adds gravity to every moment in your day. And I've gotten a lot out of just focusing on that and just recognizing that because I'm a human, I can look at that and see that and understand that.
There's some days when I think I don't really feel like exerting myself that much. with exertion, I'm like, could it just be easy for today?
So do you recite this verse, these four verses?
Yeah, so when I went to the retreat at Garrison that the Westchester Buddhist Center does, that Derek Collini. I always wanted it to be a different name. That they hand out, sort of, they do, you know, there's morning, evening, and nighttime, and this is part of it. So it's this, and then it's funny, in the book he says first take refuge, but they do this, and then you do the refuge and bodhicitta vows. So they sort of do that every day.
That's really good way of reminding yourself.
So, you signed up.
Yeah,
start that way, and then whatever else comes up, or however well I sleep for the 20 minutes the timer set for. Actually, I don't sleep in the morning pretty good most of the time. But, I mean, I just feel like it sort of reminds me, like, why am I doing this? Why would I want to sit for 25 minutes? If I didn't sit for 20, if I didn't do this, I could sleep in. I could, you know, get up later and be.
Does it feel like pressure though sometimes? Like, or do you feel guilty? It almost sounds like that a little bit.
Well, that's sort of that's my default. You can ask her. My default is to feel a little guilty. But it's more just a reminder, like, that here's the deal, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
You make a choice based on remembering that that's what the deal is. Like, you could pretend the deal is that, you know, in 3 weeks I'll have a lot of time and then I can try to help people out, but right now I'm really busy doing this other stuff that, you know, this crossword puzzle I really wanted to do and I just didn't have time to do whatever. You know, I mean, it's just a reminder. It doesn't mean I don't, you know.
Do the crossword puzzle? The reason I ask this is because I've sort of, over the years, I've been on the flip side of that where I was exerting tremendously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pendulum swings sometimes and then, you know, you burn yourself out. And I needed to find gentleness in my practice.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's another piece of the puzzle for me, at least, you know, because I was exerting. So, you know, okay, so I do a puzzle. That's part of my life, my day, my practice, my existence.
Yeah, no, it's more when it's like, well, there's someone who really could use a phone call. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I'm going to do the puzzle until it's too late to call them. Which then you're like, oh, what's that about? You know, what's happening in here that I'm making
it?
What? Yeah,
so that I'm. Why are you avoiding what you think you ought to be doing?
Yeah.
Or
I thought would be good. You know, whatever it is. I mean, sort of, it's just a piece of sort of, it's not like guilty, it's like, it is. It's reminding, mm-hmm. literally that. And you be reminded, and then you choose where you go with the reminder. You know, sort of like my phone, I have these reminders that come up, mm-hmm. and they're like, make sure that this is taken care of for mom, you know, and like, okay. Mm-hmm.
I had that actually this morning. I was heading out the door, was just on time to be able to make it on time to a meeting. And I'm heading out the door, and my neighbor is there, and she's in a tough emotional state, and I can tell just by looking at her. And I'm putting my bag in my backpack in the truck, and I'm looking at her, I'm thinking, I'm going to be late. So before I even walk over, I text, and I let my staff know I'm going to be late, and I walk over, and I go, what's going on? And she just broke down in tears, and I couldn't get in the truck with her in that state, and part of me at first was a little bit annoyed because she was disrupting my day, and then I was able to let go of it because I thought this has to happen. I'm here for a reason. I'm seeing this for a reason. I need to be there for her. So it's those moments come throughout our day where we can choose to pay attention to what we really feel we have to do, or pay attention to that moment.
Right.
Of meeting with somebody.
You know, and what, you know, would the meeting go on if you weren't there, probably.
Yeah.
Would this woman find solace from looking at an empty street? Probably
right.
not.
Right.
Yeah. And that's that piece of, but then there's that then there can be that other piece of, is this a, you know, and I don't know your relation to her, but, oh, this is someone who's going to talk a long time, and it's the same old story. And
it's not the same old story. It was a while, but it was an important thing.
Yeah, but it's just, important. You know, sort of, and where, for each of us, that comfort with reaching out and doing, yeah. and for this person or for that person, that you see, but then at least you're looking, you know. Mm-hmm. So that every day I will examine myself, yeah. like I like that, because at the end of the day, you know, did I, what's that, one at the beginning, one at the end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, were there places where, oh, you know, I did a good job or I didn't do a good job?
Yeah, and then afterwards, and you can tell yourself, I mean, afterwards I got my truck and I'm going to be late, and I'm like, but it's the right reason.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I got in the truck, started driving away, I'd be like,
yeah.
I made the wrong choice.
Yeah. And again, that,
so
you know.
This is wisdom, right?
Yeah, that's the wisdom. Uh-huh. And this is also being free and well favored, that you have a job
yes.
where you could text and say, folks, I'm going to be late.
Yeah, right.
And because you're the boss, you still have a job when you get there.
Because she's the boss.
What's really interesting on top of this is to know what's actually compassionate action, to be able to have the discriminating awareness wisdom to know that maybe there may be somebody who it's better not to cultivate that, not to sort of every time they're
right.
visible to be
right.
there.
Idiot compassion.
Idiot compassion. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Where you have no boundaries and you're just letting it take over. You know, you're feeling guilty for everything.
That's why I think it's the everyday part.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually when you just said that really struck me, that every day is a different day, actually. And what presents itself mm-hmm. is a different...
The potential.